Bahar de Hukosai. Now, the Hukosai has what we call the Tochacha, strong admonitions to the children of Israel that they should abide by the Torah. If they abide by the mitzvahs of the Torah, so they will be blessed, as we'll see shortly, with the greatest blessings. And then, im lo tishmeli, if you won't listen to me, so then the Torah tells us, see the things that have happened historically to Klal Yisrael, you see how they're written in the Pesukim. And we'll see it shortly. The whole chapter goes by. And when you study it, according to Hirsch, the way he reads this chapter, it has within it the story of Jewish existence. And you see, historically, when we're looking back at it now, how true every word it has. Traditionally in the synagogue, when it comes to the Teichacha, they read it sad, very low. It shouldn't be an ominous thing, but this is the part of the Torah really which we should have read the loudest rather than the lowest, because a lot of the questions after the tragedies happen, a lot of those things we say, where, what, how could it be, where's God? If you'd look and listen to the Teichacha, you see thousands of years ago it was warned to us exactly that these things are going to happen. They were predicted. There are two. There's one here and there's one in Dvorim. There are differences as to what period of history they relate to, the technical differences. The Ramban learns one way, we'll see. But whatever period it relates to, we see the worst tragedies that have happened, the worst catastrophes, the worst atrocities, are all foretold that they are going to happen. All right, now let's take a look at chapter 26, and we'll start from the beginning. Try just to point out a few things. It would take hours to get the entire message across. This is Bechukesai, and it starts with Im Bechukesai Telechu Ves Mitzvosai Tishmeru Vaasisem Osom. If you will go in my statutes and you will keep my mitzvos and you will perform them. Now, Hirsch says the significance of chok is what is a statute without really appreciating the understanding of it. Here it would mean, he says, as certain parameters, certain guidelines that Hashem has placed for us to function within these guidelines. We may not understand why necessarily these guidelines, but that's a chok. But a Jew has certain guidelines that he can live within these parameters. And he has to find, and he can find, the happiness and material wealth and peace and so on, functioning within these parameters and also within the laws that are drawn by the Torah by keeping the Mishpatim. Now, what will happen? What type of blessings will you have? So, the idea was that you will come back almost to a level as Adam HaRishon was in Gan Eden. We always say that in the days of Mashiach, that's what will happen. It means that, he said that, Hirsch explains it, that that which was disturbed by man when he gave up his obedience to God, that will regain by the whole of humanity when they re-enter obedience to God. But in a practical sense, he tells us in great detail in sentence 4 what will happen. You will have your reigns in the right time. That means Gishmeichem, your reigns, be'itom, in the right time. Now, the emphasis is your reigns, because the reigns, and we're speaking primarily about Israel, the reigns that come in Israel do not come about as the result of physical causes, but it comes about with our fulfilling our requirements to God. Now, this is nothing new. We say it so many times. We say it every day. Behoya, right? Behoya, we say the second chapter of the Kriya Shema, which reads that if you will listen to my voice, right? Ve'im shemotei mitzvosai v'nesati, and I will give you rains in the proper time. Not only the rain will come in the proper time, the type of rain that you demand or that you need will come. How will it come? It doesn't say because of the climatic atmospheric conditions. It says clearly because of your obedience to God. He says that's emphasized in Gishmeichem. It doesn't say I will give rain. I will give your rain. In a sense, you're the one who is responsible for the rain. If you deserve the rain as a dessert for your actions, you will then get the rain. Not only rain is a blessing, but we know at the right time. At the right time, it's a blessing. And what does the right time mean? So we'll say, well, the right time is when the soil needs it to grow and so on. That's true. That's, an atmospheric, climatic situation. But we darshan on this pasuk, the right time in certain days of the week when there are no meetings to go to at night, when you're home. So not only that, so the Gishmeichem, the Iton goes so much that it's tailor-made, that you can control the basic ingredient of human life, which is water, as we'll see, and it will be controlled according to your personal needs. It's almost like Adam HaRishon and Gan Eden. I mean, everything was tailored, the whole atmosphere, everything was tailored to Adam HaRishon. You can bring about this level. And then it says, V'nosati shalom v'oretz, in sentence 6, and, well, sentence 5 tells you how successful you will be in the growth of the crop. And in sentence 6 it says, there will be peace in the land. How does it say? V'hishbati chaya ruah min ha'oretz, I will destroy the evil beast from the land. V'cherev leisavir ba'artzachem, and a sword will not go through your country. Now, this is also important. Chaya ruah, what is the meaning of the evil beast? What kind of an evil beast will be destroyed? So here the Ramban quotes on this the Medrash, that the Medrash says that there's two opinions. According to Rav Yehuda, it means that he will take away the evil beast from the world. What does it mean, from the world? Meaning that obviously the species will not become extinct. They'll be in a zoo, but they won't come be'atzachem. They won't harass man. Because he says when the cities... when there's plenty of food and people are living in the cities and everything is proper, so the beasts were afraid to come into the yishuv. So they stay, what, in the wilderness. And Reb Shimon goes even further. Reb Shimon says, no, that it means that they won't do damage. They won't harm you. What does it mean? Just like the, he says, the famous expression, Eretz Yisrael, Reb Shimon says, will be be'eis kiyum ha-mitzvos, when you keep these mitzvos. Kasher hoya ha'olam mitchilase, like the world was before the sin of Adam HaRishon. Because he says, really, the animal itself never, in Gan Eden, Adam HaRishon lived with all the animals and all the beasts, and there was no problem of safety. Because like the Chazal tell us, it's not the scorpion that kills, but it's the sin of man that kills. And that's what the prophet Yeshaya HaNavi means when he speaks about the days of Mashiach. There's two different opinions. If it's a metaphor, according to Rambam, it's a metaphor. He would be more like the opinion of Rav Yehuda. But according to Reb Shimon, it's actual. Reb Shimon says, the famous expressions of Isaiah, that the child will play on the with the hole of the snake, where the snake lives. The child will be there and there won't be any problem. Or he also says that the behemoth, porah, the dove, and the bear will be together, and the ayah, the lion, will no longer devour flesh, but he'll eat herbs like grass, like the cattle, kibbaka yechol tevin. So what does that mean? So it means that the whole nature of the beast will change. And that's his two opinions, or two philosophical opinions. It's not only in the excerpt here of Nasati Sholem Boretz, but when you follow it down, the writings, you see, like the Rambam says, that Mashiach's time, the world will be the same type of a world that we have now, but it'll be a world with peace, without illness, with tranquility, that people can study and serve God and have a happy life. But the Rambam says, so then the question is, but how about all of the expressions of Isaiah where the cattle will be with the lion and so on? So he says that's only like a metaphor, like a mushel, to say that nations, each nation is like a beast, you know, the bear will live together with the eagle, meaning that there will be unilateral disarmament or something from Russian America. It's only an expression to show shalom. So that would really depend on the opinion of Reb Yudah and opinion of Reb Shimon. But Reb Shimon here is saying that the nature will change. He says, because the nature of the beast was never meant to devour human flesh. It happened because of man's sin. So therefore, he says, b'tor from Adam, and once they went ahead and they ate from man, so they desired, so their nature became so vicious that they won't, that become part of their nature. But once it's cured, they'll go back to their original state as they were in Gan Eden before. So this is the interpretation of the Medrash in the expression of Vehishbati Chaya Roa Minoretz. There are two interpretations of Vehishbati Chaya Roa Minoretz. But then it says also, Kerev Leisavir Be'artzachem, sword will not go through your land. Hirsch explains it the following. He says that to the social peace, that you have, like Chairo, Ameatzchem, will be quiet socially. There will also be political peace. You will remain untouched by the horrors of war outside your land, however near your borders they may reach. And this is almost it's a tremendous statement, I mean, when you think of it. Thank God, this doesn't mean all of this happens with once. Sometimes, as we see later, God gives us a little bit of the time. But this idea of you will be untouched by the horrors of war that are happening outside your land, no matter how near the borders they may reach. This needs no further explanation. I mean, it's only the Yad Hashem that has kept it outside of the borders. It's no clear. It's clearly the Baruch of God. So he says, V'cherev le'saver be'artzachem. But even more so, as we'll see later, even if Iraq wants to attack Egypt, forget about it, they're not going to pass through your land. They won't be able to pass through your land. Cherev le'saver be'artzachem. So there will be total peace. And then he says that you will chase your enemies, which we saw. V'noflu lifneichem b'chorev, and they will succumb to your sword. Sentence 8, if you notice, and 5 will chase 100, and 100 will chase 10,000, and they will fall before your sword. Now, we've seen that in our past. And then he says, not only that, you will be blessed. Why will you be blessed? V'yifreisi asem, it says. That not, he goes further. And all the riches, I will give you the greatest riches, which is what? The blessing of children. He says, I direct my providence towards your bodily and spiritual well-being, but more so, your children will thrive and grow up spiritually to be reproductions of you. And v'akimesi es brisi itchem. And this is also, he says, from the danger, we know when there's a growth of population. I mean, there's no shortage. We'll say, well, this blessing of overabundant population, I mean, you have it in India, you have it in China. In China, they're going out of their minds and trying to curb the population. So he says, v'akimesi es brisi itchem. Normally, when you have a great growth of population, it brings about a degeneration and a laxity of morals, because people have no value in a sense, they're like dirt. But he says, here it'll be differently, he says. When you go and you keep my mitzvahs, they will protect you. Your moral worth will not diminish with the increase of your population. But forget, you get new members who enter the bond with God, covenant made with your forefathers. So what he's saying is, v'akimesi es brisi itchem, this covenant that we will be God's chosen people, morally elite and elevated and so on, and plentiful. So in other places that could bring about a debilitation and degeneration. But no, you could rest assured that if everything is followed, you will have my covenant, that the covenant will protect you, and it's forever assured that you will retain your status. And then furthermore, there will be an overabundance of food. That means that there won't be any place to store the food. They'll have to take the food out and put the other food in. Now this is something, means that everybody will have to eat. I want you to realize in our economic system, which is regulated by man, you know how much food and how many hundreds of millions of dollars are spent in storing food for the food to become decayed, so that the prices won't fall. Whereas in other countries, they're starving from hunger. Now obviously, you can't blame God for that. He wasn't the economist, he didn't make that kind of a system. But here it says that there will be so much, not that you will throw away the old food. If you notice, it says here, you'll eat your old storage place. Yechaltem yoshan neishan, you'll eat from 3 years ago. You won't throw it away, it'll be used. You won't destroy it and spend millions of dollars so that you keep your artificial system. But the Chalten Yashem nation, and there'll be so much of it that Yashem Ibn Kaddish did see here. And the greatest thing will be, in sentence 11, that I will place my Mishkan amongst you. Now, because we know that for the Mishkan actually to be amongst us, there has to be great numbers of Israel. Because we say, Shuvavah Hashem Rivavais Alpha Yisrael. We know that the presence of God on earth does not come to isolated individuals. God communicates to isolated individuals. But the Mishkan, the presence, has to be to thousands of people. And is conditional to the nation itself paying him the tribute of free-willed obedience. So So if you come this way and you're disobedient, the ultimate thing will be, aside from all the physical pleasures, the material pleasures, social peace and justice, etc., you will get the climax, will be the glory of having the Mishkan, having God actually dwelling in your place. V'leisigal nafshi eschem, and my soul will no longer reject you. Meaning I myself will be the guide of your fate. And that's v'salachti b'seichechem. Because we'll see later that if you do not keep mitzvahs, so God like leaves us to our fate, not necessarily punishes. He leaves us to our fate. But here it says, if you keep this, you will be guided. I will guide your fate. Ve'atem tiyu li lo'am, and you will be recognized as being my people. And he says, I am the God that took you out of Egypt, and I broke the staves of your yoke, and I brought you in, komamiyus, upright, because they were taken out of Egypt. And through Matan Torah, in addition to taking them out of Egypt, when he took Matan Torah, so the yoke were broken from our necks. He made us an independent and a free nation. There were no remnants of that yoke left, because when he took us out of Egypt, he took us out of enslavement. But if we wouldn't have accepted the Torah, we would have been different kind of slaves. We would have been slaves of social powers. The idea of Torah, he says, gives us independence and freedom to remain upright in everything. And again, he says the whole effect of keeping the Torah in granting human dignity, social and political powers, meaning Torah has given us freedom from all other isms that can enslave man, all desires that can enslave man. So the physical of the redemption of Egypt is mentioned, I've taken you out of Egypt. And then he says, V'eshbor meteich ulchem, you won't find your burden. You know, we get burdened down by other kinds of enslavement. First could be enslaved to his job, enslaved to this, enslaved to that. The idea of freedom of Torah is like Eze Oshir, we say, like in Pirkei Avos, who is the wise person, who is a smart person. It says that a person should never praise himself. The famous Mishnah that we learned last Shabbos can be interpreted also. You know, the passage in Yirmiyah where it says, Al Yisaleil Chacham B'Chachmaso, V'Gibor B'Gurasso, V'Yashir B'Yashro, Kim Bezos Yisaleil HaMisaleil, Haskel V'Yodeya Osi. A person should never praise himself with his wisdom, with his strength, and with his money, with his wealth. The only thing he could praise himself with is Haskel V'Yodeya, with his knowledge of God. So there are many interpretations, literal interpretations, but really, the interpretation here could also be the following. Sometimes a person is enslaved, I would say, the way we're talking, by his wisdom. He's enslaved to his wealth. He's enslaved to his gvura, to his strength, right? So therefore, he can't praise himself because he thinks that he's in control of it, but actually he's a slave of it. But if he is haskel v'yodeya, you see, if he accepts the Torah, the regulations of the Torah, that supersedes that. And he's not enslaved. I mean, people will go crazy to raise money, and they'll do anything. They'll become slaves to the idea of raising money. They are. But it's bad enough when you're slaves in a matter that's permitted to you. But if there wouldn't be any restrictions, so there's no end to what the person would do. He would become totally morally corrupt. There wouldn't be a prohibition against stealing, if there wouldn't be a prohibition against lying. So his enslavement would be total. So in a sense, what liberated us from this enslavement to these passions of man? The liberation is the Matos Ulchem, that which was broken down, this yoke and Sina. So this is the good part. This is the utopia, the Gan Eden, that man should reach, but man really never reached it. Now, the Ramban says that man never reached it. But first, there are a few things that I would like to mention here from the Ramban. I made some notes, some excerpts. He says that the idea of the brachos, it's not like the blessings that we were blessed earlier in Shmos, where it says there that if you're good, God will bless. It says there in the singular, lachmecho, your bread, meimecho, the source of your water, yasireisim machlo mikirbecho, he will remove all illness from your midst. He says there he is promising us with food and with drink, and that we will be blessed and there won't be any sickness. So therefore, if there won't be sickness and health, so we'll have children who will be healthy and will live long lives. Like it says there, Leitiyam Meshakelo, this is previously in Shmos, you won't You won't have anybody who is a mashakela v'akora, God forbid, who loses their children at young ages or can't have children. But mispa yamecha amala, you will live for a long age. And it says, ani Hashem refecha, I will heal you. But if you notice, he says, that's a singular. He says, all these blessings there, although they're miracles, but they're hidden miracles. And the Torah, he says, is full of hidden miracles. And it applies even to an individual. Because he says, if a person would be Isha Chassid, a very pious person, who keeps all the mitzvahs of God, God will guard this individual from illness and from destruction and etc. V'yemale, and he will live a long life. But these brachas, he says in this chapter, do not refer to the individual. They refer to the people as a whole. B'yeis kol ameinu kulam tzadikim. And therefore it says over here the word ho'oretz be'artzechem, because the whole thing, it doesn't speak to you as an individual, but constantly your land, your land, your land, meaning the land of Israel. Because all of these brachas, he says, obviously are miracles. But you have to say it's miracles, because like we said earlier, if it wouldn't be a miracle, rain and peace wouldn't come because we say Krishna. And the other way around, because we plant in Shemitah year, so then we won't have what to eat, we'll go into exile. If we don't plant Shemitah, so we'll be blessed and blessed. So, I mean, obviously, you have to call that a miracle because it's against the normal nature. So he says, although there are miracles, but we become accustomed to them because it's not a big thing, because throughout the country, there are people, he says, Hei mitzparsimim mitzad heyosum tomid l'olam b'chol ha'aret. For individuals, he's going back to the individuals, you could find individuals who are healthy and who are so on, he says, because if a tzaddik will live long and he will be healthy, so then you'll say, what's the raya's a tzaddik? I have a Russia next door. He's 99 years old, you'll say, and he eats chazer for his whole life and he steals from people and he's 99 and he so he says, po'omim yikre zeh b'ksas rishoy. That could happen. You don't know the cheshbenis. The cheshbenis, there are a lot of reasons why, when you deal with each individual, you give judgment according to the individual. So why is that going to happen? Because that's the Derech Hashem. A lot of times he wants to pay him back in this world, like we say, so he shouldn't yash in the world to come. But Eretz Achas, an entire land, Ve'am Echad Tomit, that you should have like the land of Israel always, rain will come, and Shalva, and Brius, and Gvur, you don't find that happening to any other country. So this is clearly something that is the hand of God. When it happens to a tzaddik, the tzaddik's not losing the other world, but it's happening to him here, and it is perhaps a miracle, but it happens to other people also. That means one person lives to 99, doesn't have to be a tzaddik. But for a whole country, that is, he says, a phenomenon. That's why we find in Dvorim later, the Pasuk, V'ro'u kol ami ha'oretz k'shem Hashem nikra alecha v'yiru mimeko. All the nations of the world will see God's name on you, and they'll be afraid of you because you're God's people. They will be afraid of you because you're God's people. And a lot of people view us today as that, or they did, and because it's God's wish. But on the other hand, when it speaks, he says in the Klolos, and it tells us the terrible things that will be, that your heavens will be closed, will say, kibarzo, like steel, and there won't be any rain, and all the terrible things. So it says later, he says, the other nations will say, Ma oso Hashem kocho le'eretz azeis. What did God do to this land? Why? Because kulam yiru v'yedu, they'll know, ki yad Hashem oso azeis. That it was God's doing, because otherwise it can't be destroyed in such a fashion. The Yemru, and they will say, the nations themselves will answer, because these people have forsaken God. And then he goes into the famous Ramban, if you'll ever hear the Ramban mentioned about sickness. He says, the general idea is, when Jews are shleimim v'hem rabim, they keep mitzvahs and so on, God does not conduct himself with them according to nature. All the laws of nature are thrown away. Lo begufam, not connected individually. Lo be'artzam, not to their country. Lo bechlolam, lo beyachid. Everything is divine intervention, divine supervision. Hashgacha pratis tzivoyis. If they keep the mitzvahs. Lo yisnaik b'tevek klal. And then he says, v'kein hoyu atzadikim oisim bizman hanevuah. In the time of the prophets, tzadikim would conduct themselves that way. Gamki yikhom oven, if they sinned, that they became ill. La yidrishu bereifim, they wouldn't go to a doctor. But what did they do? They went to ask the Navi. Like it says, when Chizkiyahu became ill, he inquired of the Navi, because they didn't ask the doctor. And in fact, when they speak against the king, one king, they say that his sickness came because when he was sick, he didn't go to Hashem, but he went to doctor. And he says, "Ilu hoya," and if it was a custom that you go to doctors, so what was his sin? But he says, the idea is the following. Just like a person will say that if so-and-so didn't eat matzah and Pesach, but he ate chometz. So the same thing is here. He didn't go to God, but he went to the doctor. Meaning it was wrong to go to the doctor. But he says, Ma chelik l'ravim, the famous quote, Ma chelik l'ravim bebeis eisei rotzen Hashem, akar shehivtiach uborech eslach mecha v'yesmei mecha v'yesir eisim machla mikirbecha. What portion or what entrance did the Raphim have to go into the house of a servant of God who has God's blessing that his bread and water will be blessed and there will be no illness? Who, the doctor has nothing to do with it. The doctor is in nature. But this is directly under the Rabbeinu Shlomo. So he says, Machelik l'Raphim bebeis eisei rotzen Hashem. Welcome to the Raphim. He says, God says he's going to bless the water, and all the Raphim are concerned is the illness that you could get from foods that could cause illness. And he says, and Gemara tells us that 22 years that Rabbi Rav Yosef was ruling, so he didn't even call in a doctor to his house. And he says, and there's a parable or a saying that a door that isn't open for mitzvahs becomes open to doctors. And then he goes into the idea, but since people were not in that level, so obviously we don't have that direct supervision. We heal ourselves with doctors. He goes into that discussion. But here's where he discusses this medicine, his approach to doctors. Then when he says, I will walk within you, and he gives us the ultimate blessing. Now, the Ramban says, why didn't the Torah say that the ultimate blessing will be kiyuma nefashos? That means that we'll be zeichet to elam haba, that we have our neshama. And the blessing will be, in the positive sense, that our neshama will merit Elam Haba. When a person dies, that will go into the Elam HaNeshama. After Tchiyas HaMesim, and after Tchiyas HaMesim, the neshama will come back. Why doesn't the Torah mention that? The Torah omits that totally. It's speaking more about material blessings. And that could mislead people. You know, they'll say, if there's a world to come, and if there's, why isn't it mentioned? So the Ramban speaks about this in Achrei Mei, it's very lengthy, but here he just alludes to it and he says the following. The Einish, the punishment is not, the punishment is to the contrary. He says everything that is created and that is in existence can just change form, but it remains. So the soul is a creation. So there's no question that the soul remains. It's when the soul will be destroyed in an unnatural way with chorus that the Torah has to emphasize, that the soul will be destroyed. But it doesn't have to tell you that the soul will live forever, because it's self-evident that the soul will live forever. So the change, he says, is not in the eternity of the soul, but in fact that the destruction of the soul. So this is an important point here. So here's where he tells us why that's not mentioned. Then he says, but at the end you should know that these blessings, he says, were never achieved, not the great majority of them, and not the individual, because we never reached that madrega. When will that madrega come, he says? That will come when Mashiach will come. Now, we haven't reached that level, but it does seem that there have been certain moments when something has looked through. Now, when you analyze it, the idea that he said, "V'salachti b'seichachem," like Hirsch said, "and I will walk with you," meaning that I will give you my divine supervision. I will be the guide of your fate and director of your action. Why? Because you will merit that for a certain time. Now, when we think back to years in 48, we'll say in 67, so we saw these miracles. Certain parts of these miracles we did see. We saw the miracle of 5 chasing 100. We saw the miracle of Cherev Leisaver Ba'atzeichem. So we would think that there were certain, that gave us only an inkling or a little view of what Hashgacha means. That if we would merit this whole, this appellation of being God's children to that degree that it would be V'salachti B'seichem Tomi, would merit that. So then all of these things would be mekuyah. But there were seems, I would say, you know, from course, we talk these things this time, we have no knowledge of them. But it would seem that, just like we'll see from the Tevacha we saw, there were certain glimpses that we earned, perhaps, because of our suffering, that we earned this little bit of divine Hashgacha, and we saw how it is. It's still there, I mean, to a degree, you know. But it depends how close it is to us and how broad it is to us. But we've seen glimpses of this without any question, even the literal meaning of these psukim. This is the end of the chapter of the blessings. But then it starts, in Lei Tishma Li, if you don't listen to me, Behim Bechukei Saitimosu. So the Teres Kehanim is like a medrash, explains the steps of defection. And then we'll see the way it goes in these passages. It first starts, what did the Teres Kehanim say? That the first step is, V'im lo sishmo, you won't listen to me. What do you mean you don't listen? You won't study. If you don't study, you don't know. And then, in the second part of 14, it says, V'lo stasu, you won't do. Because if you don't know what to do, nebuch, so you won't do that. So the defection has gone two levels, that you won't study, and therefore you won't do. But then there's the third defection. In sentence 15, V'im b'chukeisai timosu, meaning if you despise my laws. He says, because a person who, once you have lost the knowledge and understanding of the Torah, and therefore it doesn't play an important part in your own practical life, because you really don't know it. So your conscience gives you no rest. I mean, what are you doing this? So you have to justify yourself that you have really, this is not as guy, you'll say, these mitzvahs as old-fashioned. But we're progressive. We don't think that way. We belong to a progressive type of a Jewish outlook. And therefore, you do that. So now that you see all these people walking around, we'll say, keeping Torah. So you look down on those people, and you say that we really have to change this. Their faithful adherence to Torah has to be compensated. He says, because the existence of the Torah and its power to form and rule life, even if the knowledge of it has been lost and ceased to be a factor of practical life, still comes to us from the life of its contemporary faithful adherents. And every loyal adherent is felt as a reproach to the deserter until he has succeeded in sophistically considering himself as the better man and learned to look down with disdain on the Torah and its followers. It's so clear. I mean, no. Then he goes further and he says, why does he chep on bechukesai, right? Why does he say bechukesai? Chok we know is a mitzvah which you really don't understand, and it limits your senses. So he says it is especially the school of the chukos, those laws which put a limitation on the life of our senses, which appear to those who have fallen away from the Torah as narrowing the lives, stunting the happiness of their contemporaries who are loyal to the Torah. He says, more than any other of God's laws, the sanctifying and moral effect of these laws are only apparent to those who keep them. Now that's obvious. For example, if you keep certain mishpatim, certain laws, you don't speak Lashon Hara. Everybody notices that. Even the non-religious person would recognize this moral superiority that you're not speaking Lashon Hara, that you give a tithe, tzedakah. I mean, everybody recognizes these laws. But when it comes to a law, say you don't wear klayim in your suit. So this guy can't understand it. For the life of them, they'll never understand it. Or if you don't cut your payas off, they'll never understand it. But they can't picture the purity that a person feels when he's wearing a garment without klayim, the sanctity that it adds to his life. They can't picture the concept of this, which what this adds kedusha, like we spoke at length last week, I believe, the separation of the two parts of the head. So these are the things that actually bother them, and that's what they keep on wanting. Now, if you tell them other mitzvahs, they could appreciate the other mitzvahs. So it says, Kol mi she'ena lemeg, the Teres Kehanim continues, that this fall from Torah so far that they have this contemptuous attitude really started with a lack of study and knowledge. The lack of study and knowledge, it progressed to contempt of Torah, the Chukesai Timosu. Ein elomeid, the ein em ma'oseh, if he doesn't learn, he doesn't do mitzvahs, sof shehu mo'ez b'acherim. So he comes to despise other people who do it. And then it continues, mishpati Tigal Nafshechem. Now, this, he says, now the defection goes on. Because who do you take it out on? He says, they take it out, let me find this, unable to rise to the understanding that these people that keep the Torah have a deep felt conviction and enthusiastic attachment to God, which produces the loyalty of the Torah. These apostates look around for causes to explain the riddle. They find these in the institutions of Jewish social life, which are based on the knowledge and practice of Torah. And the Jewish social lives that are run by the Chachmei HaTorah, the schools, the organizations. So this gets the full weight of their hatred. This is the source of it. But if we rid ourselves of the source of it, we're going to see that they won't have any adherence. So the Medrash continues, so if he's Moyes Ba'achayim, he looks with disdain at practices, at people of practices, Sof Shehusena Es Chachomim, it will come that he will despise the Chachomim who run these institutions, who personify Torah. Now we've seen this in our day too, the Enlightenment, maybe, the whole idea of secular, the Zionist secular concept of socialism in Israel. And it's really now we see it because they're going crazy, some people, those are upper person. They're seeing their children become Balei Tshuva. So they decide that we have to destroy these organizations, these yeshivas, these schools. They don't realize that it wasn't the yeshiva, the school, that went grabbing the person. It was the thirst in the person that went looking for a school. They don't realize that. So they think that if we'll wipe out so many yeshivas, right? I can never forget, 2 years ago, when I was walking in the old city of Yerushalayim, I was walking right by, going down to the castle, I was past the Paris Yosef or Yeshiva Sarkoza. I was walking those steps. So some old Israelis, you could see the weather-beaten kibbutz Israelis, some older women, like, yeshiva mi po, him kofshu esoela. That's what I heard it say. Here a yeshiva, there a yeshiva. They grabbed the whole world. It was with such vehemence and such hatred that I just looked at the person, you know. I mean, you have to have a certain hatred. Maybe you don't like it. Kofshu Yisraelim. It was, so I can appreciate her feeling because this went against their whole dream to a degree. Their dream was that this should stay in Poland. This is going to be a free socialist country. And all of a sudden, they're losing their children. So it's a difficult step. So this was foretold here. That's what the Medrash is telling. Seif Shehu Seine Es HaChachomim. So then it says in sentence 16, how will God relate to that? Hafani Eses Eis Lachem. He says, then if you're doing this to me, you're going away from me, so I'm going to start responding in kind to you. What will I respond? Yifkariti Aleichem Beholo Es HaShachefes V'Es HaKedachas. Mechalei Seinayim, if you look at 16, every word is Umedivas Nofesh. Uzratem Lorik Zarachem. I'll do the same with you. I'll decree consternation over you. What does Behola mean? Behola means confusion. The idea is physical and mental domination, the dismay and enervation which arises out of the feeling of helplessness against the effects of opposing forces, out of the loss of self-confidence. It's just the very contrary of Komamias. Komamias means we will go, like we said, Adani, we will go with self-confidence and a feeling of security and a feeling of assurance. But here all of a sudden, this dismay and enervation sets in, and we become helpless, and there's a certain helplessness that happens. It's a more psychological feeling. And not only is it in your mind, he says, but if you notice, he says, and it doesn't say v'yesa shachefes v'yesa kadachas. It just says beholo esa shachefes v'yesa kadachas. Meaning, once you have the beholo, this dismay, consternation, feeling of helplessness, you get also this illness. What is the illness? Shachefes and kadachas. Shachefes is related, he says, the condition of weakness in which a person drags himself along. You know, sometimes when you lose your mood, so you just dread depression. You just start, this lack of it. There's a physical depression. And also, Kadafas is depression, has a physical manifestation of fever, like, and you get chills and you get feverish, and it all comes from your losing of your morale. So much so that you sow your seed in vain, for your enemy shall eat it. Now, I don't want to even expound on this, but if you think into this, you see it happens in our days. I mean, you sow your seed in vain, the enemy shall eat it because of confusion. I mean, if you go to the city of Yamit and you would take a look at what was in vain, you know, you would go. And now, there are even some people who are even talking of giving back. I mean, literally. So here it comes from, where does it come from? The physical weakness is a result of one thing, he says, the dismay and the loss of confidence, certain helplessness setting in, the depression. And that ends because the further God goes away from us, the more realistic it seems everything. And once when it's realistic and we look all around, so mainly the depression becomes worse and the person falls apart. And he goes to the extreme of Zerat and Lari, V'achalu Eveifa. There's no response to that. And then he says, in sentence 17, V'nasati Ponai Kofen, V'nigavten Lifnei Eveifa. And this is so true. Look at this sentence. He says, I'll set my face against you. Meaning, otherwise, I used to look at you with my countenance, and God's shining salvation came because God looked at us. But if the face turns away, so it's like setting his face against us because his face is no longer shining on us. And he uses two terms here. There's Eveichem and Seineichem. So what does Seineichem have to do with Eveichem? So he brings down, and Benastem, you're going to run? They ain't ready to fast them. Nobody's really chasing you. You think they're chasing you because you're weak and you're dismayed and you're depressed. You're ready to give them everything. They're chasing you, but they're really not chasing you. You're chasing yourself. So the Teres Kanim says that the word Seineichem here is opposed to the word Eveichem. He says, V'nigavtem lifnei Eveichem, that you will be smitten, V'rodu b'chem Seineichem. One of them, he says, refers to internal enemies, internal enemies. The external, listen to this, it's almost eerie, the external political bad conditions bring about internal division into parties. Internal enemies of the Jewish way of life arise, who see the cause of the political unfortunate state of affairs, not in the defection from the Torah, but in those who are still faithful to its tenets. And they promise emancipation from the political yoke of the nations if you'll just give up the yoke of the Torah. So the danger is, if you'll fall before your enemies, because I'm not going to guard you. So then Seineichem, your internal enemies, are going to take hold and have a fifth column with you, and they will bring about your crumbling, because they will blame everything because of your Torah, or your strict nationalism, or whatever you want to call it. And Vinastem, you're really running, but if you would just turn around, and nothing would happen to you. Now, if this doesn't help, so then it continues. We'll stop here. That, and maybe I'd like to continue a little bit of the tape next week to show you how the progression, it's so eerie.